Blog Talk Radio.
Fireworks till 4 a.m. in my neighborhood. I had to go to work the next day. That was a weeknight. They don't understand weeknight to weekends. They're killing me. And I'd like to congratulate everybody out there. You guys are some mean, tough motor scooters. You made it through the world ending yet again. Another time the world has ended, and we all made it through tough. You got all your limbs. You're walking upright. We're doing fantastic. We hang in there. We were built to last.
Exactly. And I challenged that, you know, end of the world prophecy or whatever it was, because I had major surgery on that day. And I was like, well, if I die and if there is a heaven or hell, at least I'll feel better. At least, you know, get all the, you know, bad stuff out. And all that good fun stuff. But yeah, we made it through. It was interesting when I was in recovery, laughing with some of the doctors and the interns, and I was saying that the Mayans lied, and I wished them all a happy winter solstice. And let's just say it was a whole bunch of confused looking folks up in there, because they were saying Merry Christmas to me and I'm saying happy winter solstice. So it was interesting. It was an interesting stay in the hospital. It was, you know, I had a lot of fun. But anyway, it's funny, Father Teresa Father Teresa and Dragnock, they start their new show, The Barbershop. It starts January 15th. That's going to be taking place 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 7 o'clock Central Standard Time, which is 5 o'clock Pacific Standard. So I just wanted to let you guys know this is our new show of the year. So we're going to have them steer the year. They're starting it out, and we're actually, it's going to be a lot of fun. They're going to be talking about gun control. And, you know, it's a lot of controversy surrounding that, but they're going to talk about that and a host of other topics. Will you want to tell everybody a little bit about it? That would be great.
Now, we're going to start out, we're going to come in introducing ourselves and of course, promoting the other shows. I got to do it. I always have to say Reason, Science, and Skepticism. You will learn something. All right, always go check out Raina's show. I promote the other shows. And we're going to go into the gun talk for 30 minutes. And we're also going to introduce ourselves, you know, kind of tell you who I am. You know, there's a personality behind the crazy voice. And Alfred, he's going to take 10 minutes and talk about what it's like being without any religious indoctrination going on in his head in a family that is religiously indoctrinated. And they function in a religious fashion. And, you know, what it's like to be that one guy, that black sheep in the herd there. And we're going to, you know, hey, football, you got it. It's the barbershop. You think we're not going to talk about football? You think we're not going to trash a couple politicians? We're going to do that. It's in the title. It's the barbershop.
Right. And, you know, and we're looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. And, yes, Friday night, Mario will be back. He will be talking about relationships. You know how our shows are. You know, we cover that topic and plus, you know, a myriad of other topics as well. So Mario with his random assault will be on Friday, and Raina's show will be starting up, RSS Feed, Reason, Science, and Skepticism. That will be starting back up on Saturdays. And, of course, you know, Black Free Thinkers Radio, you know, the Sunday show. And, you know, we have been having the last year and a half has been absolutely wonderful. I've, you know, encountered some beautiful people. You know, I've had some wonderful co-hosts over the last year and a half, and I'm wishing everybody the best and wishing everybody well. And this is 2013, new chapter, new era, and I'm just looking forward to everything. You know, I'm sitting here looking at my notebook right now and looking at the shows. And, you know, even though, you know, I get a little bit of some pushback for the biblical series, my numbers are absolutely wonderful. I've gotten some really good feedback. And so we're going to continue with the biblical series. We will also continue with the feminism series. We'll be picking that back up. We also will be picking back up talking about racism and sexism and all of those different things, conspiracy theories. We may have one or two shows talking about that, but I know we're going to do several shows about health and just different variety topics regarding health. I know we're going to talk about chronic illnesses, autoimmune diseases. We're going to talk about HIV and AIDS, STIs, STDs, whatever you want to call it. We're going to be talking about all of that this year. It's just a variety of topics, but definitely we want to talk about some of the illnesses and encourage people to go to the doctor. I've posted links before where you can get free health care, whether it's physical health or mental health care, and in some cases dental health care. Some things that we're going to plan for this year, especially here in Chicago, since I'm here in Chicago, some things that I'm trying to put together, and, you know, it should be very good. And now that I'm feeling a little bit better, you know, I'll be able to concentrate and focus a little bit more on the task at hand. I got pretty sick last year and still a little bit under the weather, I'm sick. And basically, you know, just trying to pull it together and get some things situated, you know, in my personal life and, you know, my professional life so that I can have everything fall in order the ways that I need to. so that I can push on and do the things that I need to do and have everything in its proper place, regardless of what may or may not transpire or happen. But, you know, that's another reason why I'm getting the show in place, having these different shows, having the different people, because there may come a point in time when I'm going to have to pull back just a little bit. So just to kind of give you all a heads up, trying to do some things and get some things situated with Black Free Thinkers, as well as just with Kim, you know. And so if it seems like I'm lagging off, it's not that. It's just that I'm tired. And I have absolutely no control over some of the things that are happening. So, you know, I just kind of deal with it. So anyway, moving on. Talking about, yeah, I see Alfred's in the room. That's Dragnet. And guys, you know, William, if you want to give him a telephone number, that will be lovely.
Oh, yes. You're going to call us up at 310-982-4273, and you'll press 1 to speak with the host on Black Freethinkers, where we walk by sight to see what makes your whole day grow, because faith is believing what you know ain't so. Alfred, get on the line. Alfred, I know you got your phone on. Get on the line. We got to talk about that YouTube video you made with that guy that did the 40-minute video.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting, and you can also Skype in. So if you go to the home page, if you scroll up to the top, you'll see a big blue S. So those of you who use Skype, you can go ahead and Skype into the show, and we will talk with you. But I just kind of want to give you all a heads up about some of the topics that are going to come up. You know, again, with the biblical series, you know, I'm going to tie this one biblical series, and we're going to talk about it a little bit more in depth, but talk about, you know, the old church and the new church. And when you look at some of these churches, some of the churches, it looks a little dilapidated, you know, when you go in with some of the old pews with the red, and they still have the Martin Luther King hand fans and just, you know, all of that. And then you look at some of these people that have upgraded their churches, you know, and again, there's been a lot of articles and news stories about churches going into foreclosure. They had a church that was paid off. But then they decided that God had, you know, mandated that they build a bigger church. And, you know, I want to talk about, you know, how a lot of that is competition amongst a lot of these preachers. That's going to be one of the biblical series about that. And, you know, the copycat, how quite a few of them want to be mega churches. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to have nice stuff. But what I find hypocritical about a lot of that is, they talk about, you know, these young people, and they talk about the consumerism and the materialism, and I talk about it all the time as well. However, these young people are emulating what they see some of the older people doing. So when you see some of these churches, you know, wanting to be, you know, a mega church or building a church that they know that they really can't afford, if you have a church building that's paid off, why would you go and take out a loan for $5-10 million for an even bigger church and say that you're walking on faith or walking by faith, that the members will continue to support that while you still live in a gated community in $1 million-plus home and you're driving a Maybach or a Rolls or what have you, a Maserati? Well, those aren't really too expensive, but it's more expensive than your average member. But, you know, you have all of this going on and you have faith that your members will continue to support that type of opulent and lavish lifestyle. And then when you're not able to complete the building of that edifice, or if it is completed and you can't afford the, you know, the mortgage and it goes into foreclosure, then here's a caveat, guys. When churches and 501c3s take out mortgages, their mortgage terms are a lot different than your home terms. So their mortgage payments are a lot lower with a balloon payment at the end, and even that can be renegotiated. So, you know, I tell people about these different things on the show so that you all will have an idea as to, you know, what's happening and how all of this plays out. You know, you all need to understand the business aspect of the church. You need to understand how all of that works. But anyway, you know, I said all of that to kind of lead into the Red Hook Summer film by Spike Lee. I watched that. One of my members brought it to my attention. And because I'm not real big on movies or anything, or TV for that matter, you know, there's some shows I watch, but very few, very little TV. I feel it's a distraction. But, you know, I watched it. And I will tell you guys, please watch that movie, Red Hook Summer, even though they got a lot of bad ratings and it does look like a very bad B-movie. I believe Spike Lee did that on purpose. I truly believe he did that on purpose, you know, as a mockery. And, you know, it's just interesting. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about it, you know, with Spike Lee movie there. It's just interesting. But with this particular movie, it's about basically a young man that came from a privileged background in Georgia, you know, black young man, African-American young man. His mom was afforded him, you know, what some people would consider as privilege. I mean, I guess he was going to a private school. He lived in a nice neighborhood in Atlanta, Georgia. And basically, her father was a pastor in New York City, in Brooklyn. And so what happened was she took her son up there for the summer to spend some time with her father. She just dropped him off. And I guess, you know, that was her way of showing her son that there was a different way of life, that, you know, people live differently, just to kind of expose him to some, you know, things that he had not experienced. You know, however, again, you know, we've talked about different things regarding the church. With this movie, it's really interesting. The grandfather, her father, the young man's grandfather, was basically run out of town, run out of the little town that he lived in Georgia, because he was a pedophile. He was run out of town because he was a pedophile. And what happened was he molested a young man in the town. And basically, the church covered it up and paid the young man's family some money to let it go, to walk away from the situation. However, you know, he had to leave town. He had to leave town, the pastor, and he went to New York. So I guess, you know, that was another way of them covering up. And, I mean, it helps. I mean, well, basically, when I say it helps to understand what's happening here, and it helps for us to see that, because that has happened on a number of occasions, where you see in the Catholic Church and some of these other churches how they basically transfer a pedophile or a feeblephile from one parish to another. A lot of these churches do the same thing. And in this particular movie, he basically was chased out of Georgia and chased up to New York, and they paid the little boy's family, you know, some money, and, you know, some hush money. And he was free. The pastor was free to go and start a new life. This happens often. You know, this isn't anything new. And we have to talk about it. And, you know, I am glad that Spike Lee made this movie, because, again, you know, a lot of this information had been covered up for years in the church. And if you brought it up, basically you were told that you were making these things up. You were called a liar. You were ostracized. You were shunned. You know, all of these different things. And, you know, of course, you know, what evidence do you have? Interesting how we need evidence to prove that you're a pedophile, but you don't need evidence to prove that your Bible is or is not true. But, you know, anyway, you know, I'm not trying to stay too long on that, but, you know, definitely, you know, these things, you know, it needs to be addressed. And Red Hook Summer, guys, check that out. And again, our telephone number is 310-982-4273. Again, 310-982-4273. And if you want to speak with us, you have to press 1. Otherwise, I see it, but, you know, I can't pick it up because I'm not sure if you're ready to speak with us. But, yeah, you know, so Spike Lee, he talked about that and in the movie, but in some of his subsequent interviews, he talked about the black church. He talked about mega churches. It's just interesting. The tides are turning, everybody. Just listen to some of the conversations, listen to what some of these people are saying, and, you know, the fact that we are now non-believers and free thinkers and atheists or whatever you may, humanists, whatever you may want to call yourself, the fact that we are now out here and we are not afraid of declaring that we don't believe is giving other people courage, because a movie like this would not have been made 10, 15 years ago. So we're making inroads. And so, again, I congratulate each and every last one of you who happen to be standing on the courage of your convictions and you're out. And even the ones that aren't out, I understand. I understand that, you know, sometimes you just can't be for a lot of different reasons. But just know, you know, again, you know, you have a community, you're not alone, you know. Hey, it is what it is. But, yes, you guys, you need to watch that movie. And then maybe we'll do a show and another show on it and invite some people on. You never know how that may work out. But, yeah, that Red Hook Summer is interesting. He talked about the black church in one of his interviews, and he talked about, you know, how he wasn't necessarily raised in a church, or he didn't really go to church, if you will, that much. But, you know, he talks about the history of the church. And, you know, I'm supposed to be giving a talk about civil rights movement. And the big misconception that a lot of people have, and in particular in the black community, is a lot of people think that the civil rights movement was rooted in religion. No. The civil rights movement was rooted in the church only because that was the only place where black people could gather together without it arousing suspicion and wreaking havoc. It was rooted in the church, but it was not rooted in religion. The civil rights movement, which started in the 1890s, started out as a secular movement and continued on as a secular movement. See, that's the thing. The majority of these movements start out secularist in nature or secular in nature, and it's hijacked. And we have to stop that from happening. But, you know, it's interesting, again, with the technology, it has leveled the playing field. And exactly, Dr. King was not religious. If you go and read his letter to Birmingham and look at some of his later writings, you'll see the secular term that he made. You'll see that he started coming out more on secular nature, but then look at who he was surrounded by. He was surrounded by Bayard Rustin, however you want to pronounce his first name, Asa Philip Randolph. He had a lot of people surrounding him that were secular in nature, and they had a big influence on him. And yes, he was a so-called Baptist, but again, you got to remember, in our community, he was Baptist in name. But in our community, you have to remember, it's rooted in religion, if you will. I mean, even to this day, even now, to say that you're a non-believer, you know, is you're kind of setting yourself up, depending on the situation, for mocking and ridicule and disdain and all of that. And, yeah, and Rob, you're correct. The church was his cloak. Exactly. It's a cloak and dagger, you know, in a lot of cases. But, you know, you all have to learn how to read between the lines and see what's happening. But, yeah, that Red Hook Summer, guys, go out and look at that. Go out and watch that. You know, some of the scenes in the movie absolutely reminds me of when I was in church, some of the sermons. And, you know, what I find interesting, and, you know, I tell people all the time, if a pastor is too focused on one particular subject, usually that's something that he's dealing with or something he's battling with internally, personally. So I will leave that right there and move on. You know, and again, you know, sticking with you know, the church thing here. What I find interesting is with Minister Farrakhan. He gave an interview earlier this year, and I think I posted it on my wall. And if I didn't post it on my wall, just go and do a Google for it, Louis Farrakhan, YouTube, and put in Tyler Perry and T.D. Jakes. And basically, Louis Farrakhan, or Minister Farrakhan there, he gave praise to Tyler Perry as well as T.D. Jakes. And, you know, what I'm finding interesting about that is, you know, I posted earlier, well, late last year, about the Nation of Islam working in conjunction with Scientology. And we talked about it a little bit on the show. But also, you know, a lot of people aren't aware that Farrakhan also worked in conjunction with Unification Church. And if you don't believe me, go and do some research on that. In the year 2000, Unification Church co-sponsored the fifth anniversary of the Million, it was the Million Family March at that time. That was in 2000. And then also the fifth anniversary of the Million Man March was, so look it up. See, I have no reason to make this stuff up. And everything that I say, you can go and you can research it. I encourage you to do that. I want you to look up what I'm telling you. Okay? I want you to research it. And, you know, it's just interesting. Interesting when you look at the history behind that. But anyway, going on, moving on, Minister Farrakhan, he was talking about Tyler Perry, and he called Tyler Perry brilliant. And, all right, this is where I'm torn. While I do not like 90% of Tyler Perry's movies for a number of different reasons, what I will say is for him to come from living in his car to to go from living in his car to being almost a billionaire, you know, I'd hear making movies that basically panders to a certain sector of our culture, of our society. I have to give it up to him. He's a self-made man to a certain degree, even though he wouldn't have what he has had people not patroned his movies. So, you know, I want to keep that in perspective. But he had a vision. He went out there and he ran with it, and he went for it, and he was able to do that. He's keeping a lot of Black actors and actresses working, even though he pays them peanuts. He's keeping them working. He's keeping their name out there. You know, they have to eat too. They have families to support, you know, as well. So it's the whole thing is just interesting. And then when he, Farrakhan, Minister Farrakhan, praised T.D. Jakes, could have knocked me over with a feather. But, you know, he says he sees some of T.D. Jakes and Tyler Perry. And so, you know, again, you know, is that tied into the Woman Thou Art loose? And so, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting how all of this is kind of tied together. And again, you know, women, ladies, again, you are the driving force behind both of those gentlemen, Tyler Perry, as well as T.D. Jakes. And so, you know, again, you know, to a certain degree, it's about the exploitation of the woman and understanding the psychology, you know, and the pain behind what some of us go through. And to a certain degree, it's exploited and manipulated for gain. But they can't exploit it and manipulate it without your agreement. So it's just, you know, there are a lot of things that we have to talk about. You know, a lot of things we have to talk about. And I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, the Nation of Islam is commending Black Christians. What I'm saying is I think that the Nation of Islam understands the economics and the psychology behind Black Christians. and they want a piece of that. And they're basically creating alliances with these different, because, I mean, look up the Unification Church, big money, big money. We already know that Scientology has a lot of money, and they're tying it all in. They're creating, you know, correct, Alfred, you know, solidarity. Not only solidarity, but, you know, some type of unification. And then I also posted an article, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, about faithists. So atheists who aren't necessarily anti-theists in nature, but there are a lot of atheists that are in humanists and secularists and non-believers and free thinkers and humanists. I don't want to exclude anyone that are being invited to interfaith dialogues. I know I was invited to one, and what's happening is we are now being included in these talks, and it's just interesting. But I just want you all to keep your eyes and your ears open. There are things happening now that we could not have even dreamed of 10, 15 years ago. I think we have someone on the line. Is that Deborah? Is that Deborah on the line? Hold
yes,
on, Deborah.
Yes, it is. Yes, hey, it is. Lady. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How are you?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm under the weather, too.
Okay.
But I'm okay.
Excellent, excellent. But, yeah, you know, just talking, and I just want people to keep your eyes and your ears open. And, again, it's about money. It's about money. And, again, this is, you know, these different religions. And when I say religions, I'm not even necessarily specifically focusing on Christianity or Islam or, you know, Hinduism or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I'm also, you know, focusing on, you know, even with the gun control. You know, to me it's just like, you know, it's not a religion per se in the standard definition of a religion, but again, fear, guilt, and shame.
Yeah.
And fear being the biggest, you know, cornerstone there. And, you know, so I just definitely want you all pay attention. Pay attention to what's happening on around you. Pay attention, you know, read the news. Not only read, you know, newspapers from our country, but you need to read newspapers from other countries. You need to read articles in newspapers with people from people who have a totally different perspective. Even opposite perspective, or even somebody with just what we think is out there. So you can kind of put some of these things in perspective. Me personally, I'm not afraid to listen to some of these sermons. I'm not afraid to read articles of people who I don't necessarily agree with, because, again, how can you build an argument? How can you argue against what they're saying if you don't really know or understand what they're saying? So, you know, again, just try to be, you know, fair about it. Try to be fair about it. And exactly, Terry, yeah, Al Jazeera, they just bought Current TV, or they're in the process of buying it. But, yeah, Al Jazeera, you can get a lot of information from, Al Jazeera, Alternet. There are a lot of different periodicals, magazines, journals, all of that. Read, people. Read. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't stress that, you know, anymore. You need to read. You need to ask questions. You need to challenge. You know, to me, 2013 is the year of challenge. So I'm going to start challenging, you know, people even more, challenging them to think. And there are times when I may agree with you, but, again, I'm going to play the quote-unquote devil's advocate, which happens to be one of my favorite movies, just so I can, you know, see, you know, I just want those creative juices to start flowing. You know, you need to be able to defend what you believe and be able to defend it in a rational and logical way. So, you know, it's interesting, but I did post a master list of logical fallacies on my wall. Check that out and, you know, take a look at it. But, guys, a lot of stuff happening in the community. There's a lot of stuff happening in the world. I want you to be aware of it. I want you to be a part of it. You know, life is short. Enjoy it now. A community, I believe in individuality. Yes, I do believe in individuality, but I also believe in collectivism as well. Because while I do believe we should achieve individually, we should be unique, you should be original, be yourself, damn it. Don't be afraid to be who you are. But I also believe we need to work together because that's how we're going to be able to get things done. Somebody over here may have the bread, but somebody over there may have the meat. Someone over there may have the cheese. Someone else may have the vegetables that go on top. And someone else may have, you know, the eggs and the oil to make the mayo. So whatever, you know, but we need to work together. We need to work together in order to facilitate some of the programs that we want to put together and support one another. So it's just interesting. We have a call on the line from area code 615. May I ask who's calling 615?
It's Judy.
Hey, Judy! Mm-hmm. Hey, for you all who don't know, Judy is our faithful research assistant. She helps me quite a bit with some of these topics, and Judy is a friend of the show and, you know, much, much love.
Well, I just wanted to put my two cents on the line, I guess, about gun control, since that's a major topic lately, and about what you say, how we really need to band together, because I find there's this dangerous trend of everyone polarizing the situation, that if you're on the left, you're supposed to be anti-guns, you want to take it away from everyone. Then there's the other extreme where people believe, well, if you're on the right, you want to have everyone armed to the teeth. And somehow I just don't believe it's that way for everyone. I do believe there are extremists, but I don't believe everyone is an extremist. I think most people want the same thing because nobody really wants to see another kid die in school. But I think most people realize you can't take all the guns away without it becoming another crime, like with all these people thrown into jail just for smoking pot. You can't really have an extreme and have a happy society either way.
You know, yeah, extremes, you know, but you're always going to have extremists. And the same, and they're usually quite in the minority, but because they're loud, you know, they get the attention. And, you know, Terry says it's not a left or a right issue. And I agree with that to a certain degree. To me, it's all about money, you know, and the gun control issue or the gun uncontrol, you know, all of that. Basically, you know, a lot of people
have, funded by,
you know,
the NRA.
Yeah, and basically the NRA started out, you know, advocating for gun owners, but now it has changed, whereas now they are for the gun manufacturers. So, you know, they want you to spend money. They want to incite fear. And again, I am pro-gun, you know, but I also feel that, you know, it should be extensive background checks. I feel that you should go through a psychological evaluation. I also feel that you should basically be trained. You know, definitely, you know, people need to be trained. You know, how are you going to buy a gun and you can't really see straight, let alone aim straight? And so, you know, it's just, you know, there's a lot more to it than that.
And how many people really absolutely need assault weapons that puts everyone's life on risk, especially the first responders like the policemen?
Right. And, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, now they're trying to train the teachers to have weapons, and then now they're trying to train the janitors to have weapons. And, I mean, you know, it used to be a point in time when all the janitor had to do was kind of sweep and mop and pick up the trash. Now they have, you, it's just, it's interesting, but, you know, they already don't really want to pay the teachers. And then, you know,
I was a janitor in that position, I'd ask for a pay raise.
Exactly. And, you know, what's interesting is, you know, even with some of the teachers, you know, I'll just go ahead and put it out there, and this is how I really feel. The American educational curriculum is trash. It's absolute fucking trash. And we need to go in and revamp our entire educational system. And when I say educational, I'm talking about public and private. Don't call me about that bullshit charter school stuff. We need to revamp our educational process, period. And So, you know, again, you know, we just, it's, and different children have different ways of learning. We need to understand that. It's just, it's ridiculous. But anyway, you know, they don't want to pay the teachers. They don't want to allow them to have any type of real creative input as far as creating the curriculum and what kids are taught. But yet you want them to be a social worker for the children that come in. You want them to be a surrogate parent to these children. You want them to, you know, be the eyes and ears, kind of like, you know, a priest to these children so they can report back to the counselor and the principal of these different things. You want them to also be, you know, an advocate for these babies, which I agree with. But you also want them to spend their own money because school is, you know, the school system, especially administration, is so corrupt that they're spending money, you know, in ways that's not conducive to, you know, the school system. You know, a lot of school systems have gotten in trouble. You go into their basement, they have boxes and boxes of new computers and books that they have not given or set up for the children. And these children are dealing with antiquated books. It's just, it's crazy. But you want these teachers to be all of these things, but you don't want to pay them. You don't want to acknowledge them. We have a problem. You know, we have a problem. And it needs to be fixed, you know. And yeah, you know, there are some lazy teachers out there. And that's the reason why they should be fired. And while I do believe in unions and all of that, it's not helping the children when you have someone there that's only there for a paycheck, that do not care about the children, that do not care about, you know, what's happening. You know, they'll tell you, you know, they have theirs, so now it's time for you to get yours. That is a horrible attitude to have. And, you know, it's not only with, you know, some of these teachers, but you hear it in our communities. You hear it in these churches. You hear it in a lot of different places. Yes, you may have yours, but what about the people there that are stuck? There are a lot of good people, a lot of, you know, intelligent people that happen to be caught up in bad situations. In some cases, they put themselves in that position, but in other cases, not so much, just different circumstances. And we need to do better. We need to do better at that. We need to look at other countries to see how they've improved their educational you know, curriculum, and why they went from being at the bottom of the list to the top of the list. And we can do that. We have more than enough money. We have more than enough money. So, you know, whole thing, interesting. And, you know, exactly, someone said in a room here, in a chat room, we want to underpay teachers and then send them to schools with kids we aren't raising with the gun. Oh, that's too funny. But, you know, it's we have to do better. We have to do better. You know, there was a controversy. I don't remember where it was, but this happened in the past 2-3 days where a student brought a gun to a school and it made it through all the way inside. And, you know, the school had to call the parents, and they had to come up there, and the parents were upset because this wasn't caught before the kid got the gun inside the school. And, you know, again, you know, these kids are emulating what they see the adults doing, and that's why we have to stop this. Do as I say and not as I do. Why can't you just do the right thing? In some cases, people, these people really do believe they're doing the right thing. So it's just, it's a matter of, you know, perspective. But, you know, hey, you know, it gets better. We're seeing society evolve. We see what's happening, you know, in our society. But anyway, we're going to get back to Minister Farrakhan. And just talking about, you know, he was talking about Medea. And he said, and I quote, "I have never seen his portrayal, Tyler Perry, portrayal of Medea as a man cross-dressing. I saw his wonderful portrayal of Medea as bringing to the forefront the strongest person in the history of our sojourn in America, and that is Medea, that strong black woman who was the cornerstone of her family. She always was that figure, that guidance of correction, reprimand, discipline, and Tyler Perry brought her to the screen in funny ways. But what I was seeing was the greatness of the strong black woman who saw us through from yesterday until today. When you look at Tyler Perry's movies, you see the brilliance of T.D. Jakes, a spiritual giant. You see the majesty of human problems acted out. So you could sit in the theater and see yourself in your madness, in your gladness, in your goodness, in your evil, then come out of that experience for a $15 ticket and some popcorn and say, wow, I feel better now, end quote. All right, so here we go. Wow, I feel better now. Well, I mean, you feel better after a damn good orgasm. You feel better after a good meal, which kind of releases the same type of endorphins. You feel better after all of these different things. The question is, what do we do to make things better? So you can feel better for 15. You feel better after you hear a sermon at church in most cases. Until you get to the parking lot, and then it turns into the Wild West. If I wasn't a Christian, if I wasn't a child of God, I'd beat your ass because you cut me off. You hear all of that in the parking lot. They felt better when they heard the sermon. They felt better after they watched this movie. How are you going to be better? See, you know, I'm hearing all of this rhetoric, but come on. Seriously. Mm-hmm. Help me out.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that if the church has been teaching people how to go to heaven instead of how to live.
Exactly.
And that's been the problem. Even now with all this shooting, they want to say that the reason why it's been all this shooting is because we done took prayer out of school. You know, they're not realistic enough for. And they need to bring, this is the time, it used to be a time where you could tell those little baby stories and, for the Bible, tell me so, and all that stuff could go, but this is a whole brand new era in life. And you got to be realistic. You got to deal with the problems that people are going through. And that's what you need to bring into the church. And just like you was talking about Martin Luther King, here in Virginia, when Martin Luther came through, the churches here wouldn't stand behind it. The black churches here wouldn't even stand behind him. You know?
Yeah, exactly. So, there's a church here in Chicago because we have a Martin Luther King Drive. And a lot of people don't understand and realize when Martin Luther King was out there advocating for civil rights, this is the reason why I say that civil rights movement was rooted in church but not in religion, because a lot of these preachers were against the civil rights movement. They were against Martin Luther King. They were for the status quo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were fetching and stuffing, shucking and jiving, you know, genuflecting and kissing the rings of the powers that be, because they didn't want to rock the boat. And so they were against Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement. There's a church here in Chicago. Their front doors used to face this one particular strip in Chicago. When they named that strip to Martin Luther King Drive, that particular pastor who was angry at Martin Luther King, he bricked up that door and opened the church and totally modernized his church to open up on the other side, just so that he would not have to see King Drive.
Wow.
Now, I hate the word hater, but that's some hateration, right? That's some real hateration,
yeah.
You know. And, you know, it's interesting how, you know,
just
all
like,
of that. Go ahead, honey.
I would just like Harriet Tubman said, I would have saved more if they only knew they was a slave. You remember that? They think that's where they're supposed to be, you know?
Right. Right.
Weird.
Right. Go ahead, honey.
Yeah,
weird.
And you know where they said, I saw in the chat room, like, they're sending the underpaid teachers there to work with kids that people aren't raising with guns. And like, yeah, that's a part of the kids that people are not raising. Like, you can't leave a kid to be halfway raised by an imaginary friend. You're not doing the whole job. Nah.
Exactly. And, you know, tying, you know, that in, you know, what William just said, it is not the school and the teacher's responsibility to raise your child.
Mm-hmm.
And school is not a babysitting service. You know, it's just so much wrong with the thinking. We have to change the thinking of the people.
Yes.
School is not a babysitting service. And the teachers are not surrogate parents to your children. And
yeah,
it's just softly. Not only. Go ahead, baby. I'm listening.
Yeah, like you can't tell somebody how to raise their kids. But you know, like we said this before, like your kids are my kids. As soon as your kid that you're raising in your household is old enough to leave the house without your supervision, however you taught that kid it's okay to behave will affect me and everybody else once that kid gets out in the public doing whatever you allow in your household. And like you said, the school's not a babysitting service. Your kids should already have manners and not goof off or go too far to be violent.
That's why I could never be a teacher. I don't have the patience because, see, as soon as you act up, I'm on you. You know, they would be firing me quick. You know what I'm saying? I don't have the patience to put up with the nonsense that, you know, I give them props to be able to deal with all that stuff, but it's unnecessary. You know, the stuff that they have to go through because in time you do something, here comes the parent on your case. I would actually go off. I wouldn't have the patience. And I got two sons, you know. I grew up, they would spank your butt in school. They'd take a little ruler and hit your hand, and you knew you had did wrong. I think when they stop little things like that in school, I'm not talking about doing stupid stuff to kids. I'm talking about punishing them, letting them know they're wrong. You understand? When you're disrupting the whole class, you know, I don't know. I made my kids, when they come home, the first thing they had to do was to do their homework. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're doing
right
now. I don't know.
Well, you know, yeah, and that's great, you know, when the kids come home, you know, having to do their homework. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of these children come home and their parents don't know how to do the homework. There are some that do. I'm not saying all of them. Or, you know, a parent may understand the math but have no clue about the English and the science and all of that. You know, a lot of people don't realize and don't know that when your children are in school, in particular, public school, if your child is having issues, the public school is supposed to offer tutoring. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, a lot of these 501c3s, in particular churches, they receive money. They receive grants to have after-school tutorial services.
Yeah.
And most of them are functionally illiterate. You know, I know this one pastor here in Chicago calls himself Doctor something or the other, and he's a functional illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I guess he wrote his name on a piece of paper and wrapped it around a check, and he
mm-hmm.
sent him his little doctorate degree or whatever. But, you know, you have to be very careful. But as far as, like, you know, me personally, I don't believe in corporal punishment. I don't believe in corporal punishment. You know, I helped to raise 13-plus nieces and nephews, and I never really spanked them. At all. I would sit down and I would talk to them. I would tell them what they did and what was wrong with what they did, what they should have done. And then I would give them another opportunity to rectify the situation. And, you know, it's just interesting, but as far as, like, the children in school and all of that, you know, have to be careful with that because you have some people out here. And, you know, and I understand what you mean when you said, you know, give them a little tap on the hand or leg or whatever. And the reason why I don't advocate for that is because we have too many adults out here that are unbalanced.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Didn't you want to give them guns, too?
Right, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, not only give them guns, but they don't even need a ruler. They don't need a shoe. They don't need a belt. They don't need an extension cord or whatever they're going to try to use to
yeah,
get to those things. They don't
right.
need... they don't need any of that. They need to learn is how to communicate effectively with these children and, you know, take away something, you know. So let's just say, you know, kids nowadays, they don't even really have a lot of recess or anything like that, and you don't want to take that away from any of those children. That's how they expend all of that energy, which is why they can't control them in classrooms half the day. They need to get outside and run a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, take away something. So, I mean, if I, Kim, if, you know, Black Nonbelievers of Chicago, Black Freethinkers, if we were to ever to open up a school, whether it be a free charter school or what have you, you know, we would incorporate things like, you know, graphic design and, you know, have after-school programs. If a child, you know, acted up, and whatever it is they acted up, you know, we would find some type of subject. So then maybe at that after-school program, you know, 1 hour or a couple of hours of library time and then hour of reading, and then you have to write an essay, you know, as to what they did that was wrong and why they should not behave that way. But also in addition to that, depends on what they did, because that child may be crying out for help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, it's just different things. I feel that we should have, you know, a lot more sociologists, psychiatrists, you know, in the schools, but not just helping, you know, a particular teacher or a particular child, but it should be family therapy and helping the family. Maybe that child is acting up because, you know, maybe that child comes from a single-parent home and that particular parent has addiction issues and that particular parent may be doing things to feed that addiction. And the child is seeing that, and, you know, maybe the child isn't getting food at home. I mean, it can be a number of reasons, so we have to look at the big picture.
Right.
We have to look at the big picture. We have to look at the big picture. And so, you know, it's just, you know, it's interesting. Times have changed. Oh, yeah, I remember naps. You know, between lunch and naps, my favorite times of the day at school. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah. You know, we have to go about looking, you know, about these, looking at these things a little differently, and not just automatically ruling, you know, people out, you know, ruling these children as problem children. And we're going to talk about that in a second, because I want to talk about, you know, the media and how they portray different children from different cultures. But we have a caller on the line. We have Simpopath on the line. Simpopath, welcome.
Welcome. I couldn't help but comment in here what you were talking about problem children and how that's because it's because a lot of people aren't paying attention to them.
That's correct. Some of these children, they need attention. They're not getting any attention at home. And you know,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately, in our culture, and I've seen this in different situations, with some people, they don't care if it's good attention or negative attention. So it can be positive or negative, as long as they're receiving some type of attention. And, you know, that's what makes it hard for some of these teachers, because, you know, if you have 30, 40, and in some cases 50 kids in a classroom, you know, it's hard to pay attention to all 50 of those children and still teach and still be able to fulfill the obligations that
mm-hmm.
you're under, you know, contractually. And so it's just we need to go in, we need to look at these things, and we need to revamp. And, you know, again, it's not quite as cut and dry as a lot of people try to make it
yeah.
out to be.
Single-parently.
Yeah, it's going Nintendo on you.
Yeah, your Skype is going in and out on us. We're not hearing what you're saying, dear. Sorry.
Yeah, I apologize. My microphone does that. Is it better now?
No, not really. I'm sorry. Okay. You know, you're cutting your in and out. I heard you say something about, is your microphone working now? So go ahead and say something else. Maybe it
Yeah, it just works in little spells. I never figured out why it did that, but it but I believe that negative words nowadays. Sit after class for 30 minutes or that stuff doesn't really work.
Right.
I think I think like back in the day they had it right, and I mean we stopped corporal punishment in schools, crime rates went up, the amount of misbehavior in classes went up. Like back when I was a student, I would there were always kids in every class who would they would speak out, they would pay no regard to the teacher or anybody else. They'd just chat with their friends, and I think it's mostly on the part of the school not being able to do anything about that. Because I mean, if they're protected by their by the teacher's rules, they can just do whatever they want. It kind of the teacher's own rule protects them.
Right.
What's your piece on that?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, it's just. It's interesting, you know, with some of the punishment, and you're right, making them sit after school for 30, 40 minutes and sit there and put their head on a desk. You know, they call it detention in some schools. But, you know, that time can be utilized some other kind of way. So, you know, if that particular child that acted up, let's say that child is having some issues with math and, you know, there's going to be a variety of different children acting up, if you're going to put them in a detention hall, put them in different categories and then have the teacher there to explain and help them with their homework. Make that detention time, make it count. Make it count.
Yeah.
You know, make them read a book and write an essay. Make it count. You know, it's interesting, but I mean, you know, some of them will behave better in class, but the thing is that with some of them, you know, they may want the detention. You know, and to be honest with you, and this is going to be a bit controversial, I believe that it should be a longer school day, and this is not necessarily to help the parents and to provide a babysitting service, but again, with a lot of these children, especially in economically and educationally disadvantaged areas, these children have nothing. And if you make
you're talking about areas full of high amounts of minorities.
Well, also in rural areas as well. So, I mean, you know, even if you go to West Virginia and some of the poor white neighborhoods, I'm talking about economically and educationally disadvantaged. So whether they're black, Latino, white.
Yes. Ma'am, I'm going to stop you there. Uh-huh. I believe you just used poor and white in the same sentence. I need you to go back and think about that again.
So there's no such thing as a poor white person?
Name three.
Name three poor whites? I can name three people that I grew up with. I grew up in an area and there were some poor whites, but, you know, I don't want to put their information out there like that.
What were their names?
That's not my business to put their names out there. You know, that's a violation of their privacy.
And, you know, when I think about it, I kind of revoked my last comment because, when it's a Caucasian that is poor, they're usually the poorest when you think about it, because, when they're white, what do? They work hard, they, try to support their families, and they're genuinely unintelligent people. But when an African American or a, whatever you can call those things that come from Mexico, whatever you can call those.
Oh, he's just trolling.
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah, mute him.
Well, no wonder his phone was messing up.
Right, exactly, you know.
Yeah, no.
Right, you know.
Well,
he needs
to educate himself.
Yeah, he knows. He's just playing a prank. He just wanted to, he's probably just going across Blog Talk and doing that to any show that's live right now.
Exactly. 2013, not 1813. He better get himself together, boy.
We have Mario on the line with us, and
wow.
You know, it's just, you know, it's interesting. You know, there are poor whites, and so that's why I asked him, so are you saying that there are no poor white folks?
Wow.
And, you know, the whole thing, you know, he's trying to give me the name, folks, and I'm like, why would I violate their privacy? But, you know, we let him go on, and he's gone, and it was another one in on the line, and I just went on and cut that off as well. But, you know, it's just interesting. He said those things from Mexico. You know, again,
that
going back to, yeah, that was horrible, and I condemn that, you know, because I have Latino friends and associates and, you know, some beautiful people. Anyway, we won't even go into my history with, you know, different cultures here. But, you know, what I will say is learn some of the history of this country. When you look at, you know, Texas and California and some of those states over there, all of that used to be Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And we purchased that land, well, we really filibustered it. And again, go and do some reading of some history, look up American filibuster, Texas, all of that. And the only reason why we didn't get the rest of Mexico is because there were too many pork. And, you know, again, I was talking about at one point in time, blacks in Mexico, slavery in Mexico, they have a vast history. Go and read some history. Go and learn some things. You know, anyway, yeah, you know, we're going to get back to, you know, what we were talking about. But, yeah, you know, after-school programs for the children. And, again, I want to say that school day should actually go longer with, you know, for the children. And, again, not because, you know, it's a babysitting service or anything like that. And, I mean, even with the teachers, you know, having different teachers, different subjects, teachers that specialize in certain areas should teach that part so the teachers in certain schools can go from class to class. And that way, you know, from 9 to 10 is math in this one class and English in another class, and the teachers that specialize in that, you know, can come into the class instead of having these kids go from room to room. You know, have the teachers circulate. But the reason for that is also, you know, some of these children have nothing. And, again, providing the three meals a day, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I know some parents will be like, well, I want to pick my kids up and spend time with them. And, yes, get your kids, spend time with them. But in many cases, many of these parents don't make it home till 5, 6 o'clock in the evening anyway. And so you have latchkey children, and then when you have your neighborhood pedophile, you know, it's just, you know, and it's just it's interesting. And Terry is correct. He says it cuts down on juvenile crimes, and statistics show that. And that's absolutely correct. You know, give them something to do, you know, after school programs, like I said, you know, with computer science, especially the kids that are good in that. You know, they've taken music and art out of school. We have to do better with the money that we have to help these kids and do better, as well as, you know, with curriculum. And, you know, I see we have another Skype caller on here. And we have Mr. Jeeves. Hello?
Hello. How are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I called in because you made a comment about the parts of parts of North America, the southern parts that were gotten from Mexico. And I'm curious. I hear this brought up often. What exactly do you mean by that? It was purchased. It was our land. Nobody has problems with the people that are natural citizens. And if you actually look at Mexico itself, there's not much they can do with that landscape, which is kind of the same here. That's why we use it for cattle and oil. So when people
and
cross the border
again,
and come to America,
talk,
no. Hold on. Let me finish for a second.
No,
when
it's
they come
my
to
show. And goodbye. Anyway. You know. Exactly.
Boy.
So, anyway, getting back to the kids and, you know, with the after-school programs and, you know, assisting them and cultivating their talents. And it's just interesting. And then, you know, there is a program here with, of course, the Catholic school in which what happens is the students of that particular school, they enroll in this program which teaches them job skills. And what happens is different corporations, what they'll do is they'll allot one salary. So that salary may be $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. And what they do is they give that money to the school. But the school, basically, they have the kids go to this office for one day a week for a few hours. And each child gets there and they get practical skills working in a corporate environment. And the money that the corporation or the salary that the corporation donated to the school, it goes towards their tuition. Well, why can't we take that same type of program and implement it in a public school and take that money to implement after-school activities, to, you know, help them with different things with some of the kids, especially the poor ones with the uniforms and all of that. There are a lot of ways that you can look at this, and you can take that money, and it's giving the kids practical skills so they know what's happening and what to do if they were ever employed in corporate America. It gives them a sense of pride. You know, they're able to network. They're able to, you know, acquire skills that they normally would not have. I mean, you know, this is done in Chicago, Terry. Give me a few minutes, and I'll post it on my wall. But, you know, this can be implemented, you know, all across this country, not only with charter schools or public schools, you know, and private schools, and just in different other areas as well, even with some of these, you know, 501c3s, dealing with, you know, young adults and adults that need a second chance. You know, because what I find interesting is in some of these school systems, basically, I mean, well, not in school, but some of these young adults and adults with a second chance, and with some of the prison systems, while they're in prison, some of them are doing telemarketing work, customer service work, and they're paid pennies on the dollar. In some cases, they're paid worse than people in third world countries. And they're trained to do these jobs, and they do it to the best of their ability. But why aren't these corporations hiring these same people when they leave the penal system? Mm-hmm. You know, you can start them out at junior level and allow them to work their way up. But again, you know, tying that into the recidivism rates, you know, they want them to go back to jail because then they can pay them pennies on the dollar. I mean, it's just when you look at the whole thing, it's just corrupt.
It is.
Absolutely corrupt.
Yeah, it's all about the money.
Exactly. It's definitely, you know, about the money. And, you know, again, interesting how all of this all works out. And, but, you know, we can do it. We can implement these programs. But, again, you know, it takes work. And not only work of the people that want to organize it, we need other people. And in most cases, it's not people asking others to work for free, you know, because in some of these situations, you know, they are paid positions. But, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about our communities and what we need to do as far as our communities to make the communities better and stronger. But yet when it comes time for volunteers or donations and all of that, then, you know, the story changes.
They need to teach entrepreneurship too. You know, not just teach to go to work for somebody else, but they need to find out, you know, what kid at a young age, what is the kid's interest, you know, and build on that, you know, what are they good at?
Right, finding their talents and cultivate it. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you have a child that's good with computers, and because I know this one young lady, absolutely great with computers, and she actually wants to work for Pixar. You know, she wants to do the computer graphics and all of that. But, you know, yes, you know, beautiful, and she's good at it. But her family, you know, couldn't necessarily afford a computer. I gave her a computer. You know, just different things. She wasn't getting the encouragement. You know, I just, you know, with people like that, you know, if you can encourage them and let them put together, especially if you have a graphic arts and computer science, you know, program, let them get together. Let them create their own, you know, animated movies, their own anime. Let them create their own, you know, videos and things, and encourage them to do these things. A lot of talented children,
Yeah.
It's just, it's a shame. And especially in a lot of, you know, these economically and educationally disadvantaged, you know, neighborhoods and communities, you know, a lot of that talent goes to waste.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll be the first one to say, when I was younger, you know, my mom got us out of the city and moved us out to, you know, a more rural area. And, you know, what I find interesting is, you know, there were opportunities that were taken away from me when we left the city. And my mom, you know, used to claim that she felt that I would get bored and that I was bored here in the city and that, you know, it would lead to some, you know, bad decisions or whatever. And, you know, that happens often, but a lot of parents fail to realize if you if you get your children involved in after-school activities, and in my case, if my mother wasn't spending her money buying choir robes or Bibles or books and running behind these churches and these preachers, you know, there would have been money for me to be able to do some of the other things that I wanted to do. So when I get to talking about some of these church folks and decisions that they make, it's coming from experience. Go ahead, Mario.
You know, growing up, you know, I don't know how you know it is really, you know, in a lot of y'all's places and whatnot, but you know, growing up in the, you know, kind of rural small town and everything like that, there was definitely a way that your parents raised you. You know, my grandma always used to say, and then when she was growing up, if you was over someone else's house and you were doing something wrong, that person, that kid's parents would whip you. And when you got home, you got another whip.
Mm-hmm.
At school, you could get on spanking by the teacher and then get a spanking when you get home and everything. I remember, you know, we had like a fear of our teacher. You know, we had this fear, like, not that the teacher would beat us up, but that, you know, being disciplined was a bad thing. You know what I'm saying? Being, getting bad grades was a bad thing. You know, I actually used to get on spankings, I mean, whippings for getting bad grades, man. And, you know, and I just remember a lot of that stuff, you know, and it just doesn't seem like kids nowadays have the same, not only the same reverence, you know, stand for education, but that kind of like a fear that, you know, messing up in school is a bad thing. And you know, and your parents, this doesn't seem like, you know, the parents these days have the same attitude about education and the importance of it as, you know, they did when, you know, prior generations, including mine and whatnot. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way, but, you know, I just, you know, if we're going to change America, you know, the best way to do it is start with the next generation coming up, because we still got a lot of the status quo shit in politics and in the way things are being run in this country. There's still a lot of these old heads from the old days still trying to hold on to that last little bit of the old days when everybody knew their place and, you know, saying, you know, certain minorities and women, you were supposed to be quiet. You know what I'm saying? And then,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I just think that we're stuck between, almost like, it's almost feel like we're stuck in between two different transitions, the old days and what is coming up or something. I don't know. Maybe
You're
I lost
right.
my...
You're right.
Exactly. Well, he's very much so right. Mm-hmm. You know, the focus has changed. You know, the focus on getting an education and being educated, and it's okay to be a nerd or a geek. It's okay to be different. It's okay to learn. But, you know, I remember even when I was in school, you know, being a smart kid, being a nerd or a geek, that was, you know, somewhat looked down upon, but they kind of left us alone. You know, we would get, you know, some kids would get mouthy or whatever, but for the most part, they left us alone. But I've seen kids get beat up, you know, because they were smart and because they were nerdy. I've seen other kids who were very, very intelligent dumbed down so that they could fit in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we have to change. We have to change that culture. But I see that changing because, you know, now I see, you know, different things saying intelligence is the new sexy. You know, it's just starting to change a little bit. So I'm starting to see, you know, us coming around slowly but surely, not as quickly as I would want it to be, but, you know, every little bit helps, and nothing happens overnight, and we have to give it time. But, you know, again, for those of us in the free thought, humanist, atheist communities, you know, again, stressing the education and stressing a little bit more than just the math and the science. You know, English and history is very, you know, those are important subjects as well. You know, a lot of different subjects, but, you know, we want these kids to be well-rounded and, you know, encouraging the education. The bad part about it is that, you know, education and in particular tuition has gone up exponentially. Many of these kids can't afford it. They can't afford to go to college. And then here we go as I... You know, put it, you know, this is just my opinion. To be honest with you, I believe that the way that our, you know, collegiate system is set up is extortion.
Yeah.
It's extortion.
Definitely.
You know, and it's interesting. It's extortion. Why, you know, and I believe that, you know, a lot of the prerequisites are needed, not all of them, but quite a few of them are, and this is why these for-profit colleges are flourishing. This is why they're popping up, because basically they're telling people, look, you can come to this school, and within 2 years, you can have your bachelor's degree, and you learned what you needed to learn in order to be efficient and successful at that particular skill set that you're interested in. And that's the reason why these schools are making a profit. And I just do think that, you know, it needs to be revamped, because when I was in college, I went to the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I was an electrical engineering major. And instead of having a 4.0 or 4-hour system, we were on a 5-hour system. So, you know, it was 5 credit hours as opposed to 4 credit hours, which made it a lot harder. And, you know, it's just interesting, but, again, you know, we have to change some of this. Everybody has to adapt. Everybody has to adapt. It's just interesting how all of that works out. But, yeah, so, I mean, hey, we're making changes. Hopefully, you know, changes will be made, because a lot of these changes, just some of the programs, it has to be changed at the federal level. And, you know, they have Arne Duncan up there now as the Secretary of Education. He came from Chicago. He was over the Chicago system for a long time, and President Obama brought him up there. And one of the issues I used to talk about with some of the teachers, you know, I have some associates and friends that are teachers here in Chicago, and they used to say that Arne Duncan's hands were tied because of Mayor Daley, and so he wasn't able to implement certain things. Now he's the Secretary of Education. You know, I haven't heard a lot about what they're doing and what they're trying to implement, so I can't really point the finger, because maybe I need to do some more research before I speak on that. But if there was anything truly, you know, earth-shaking, we would have heard about it now. And so, you know, I'm just trying to figure out what's happening with this particular administration. And now that he's, you know, in a lame duck session, and we're basically a lame duck presidency now, because, I mean, he can't be elected anymore, what is he going to do regarding education, and in particular inner city? You know, we have to do better. We have to do better. But in addition to that, you know, it's not all on the president. What about the constituents? What about those of us, you know, here that voted him into office and voted? And it's not just President Obama. I mean, he doesn't make the law. Congress makes laws. And that's why we understand about the three different branches of the government and how they work. So you have the executive branch, which is the president. And then you have the legislative branch, which is Congress. And then you have the Supreme Court, which is the judicial branch. So you don't need to understand how our government is set up and how it works. And, you know, judicial branch, they enforce the laws. So, you know, again, yeah, and Isaac, and you're correct. Yeah, he signs the laws. So, yeah, he does play a part. He does play a part of that. He does sign the law. He does have executive privilege. You know, he has power. He has power. You know, won't take that away from him. And, you know, but he also needs the support of Congress. You know, yeah, and the judicial branch, they interpret the law. Correct. I stand corrected. And so, you know, and that's true. And, you know, it all plays, you know, a part there. They all play a part, but we play a part as well because we keep electing these people. There are some people, you know, here in Chicago, you know, for Cook County, it's just amazing. The gentleman, Mr. Schroeder, who was over the Cook County, or over the county of Cook, if you will, he had, you know, led that for decades. This man had a stroke, and there's a consensus by many people that he had died, but the family kept him on life support so that it would not be, so that, you know, he could continue to run while he was in this coma. He won. He won. And once they realized that he won the election, once it was, you know, authenticated that he had won, then what happened was they made a move to make his son the winner of that election, and then they declared this man as brain dead. And this happens all the time. I mean, even with Jesse Jackson Jr., even when he had his so-called manic episode there and he ended up at Mayo, you know, for his issues, he won that election, and he didn't even really run. He won it, though. Mm-hmm. And people were voting because of name recognition. And finally, he stepped down, and now we have a free-for-all here in Chicago for that particular seat in the House. But what I'm saying is we need to get out here. We need to start researching these candidates and mm-hmm. stop voting for people because we're familiar with them, because we recognize the name. It's just, it's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible. You know, with, you know, Jesse Jackson, you know, Jr., you know, I wish him nothing but the best. Him and his family. His wife resigned as well. She was an alderman. Yes. So he was in the House of Representatives, and his wife was an alderman here in Chicago, and she just resigned. And, you know, it's a lot going on with that particular family and with Jesse Jackson Sr. Mm. I saw him on MSNBC talking about gun control. And, you know, what I will say to the people is with people like Jesse Jackson Sr., I remember one point in time he was here in Chicago and they were protesting the liquor ads in our communities and the number of liquor stores that were in the community just out protesting, picketing, all of that. Well, that silently went away.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, why isn't anybody asking why?
Mm-hmm.
Follow the money people. Mm-hmm. We'll just say some of the younger Jacksons, they have a business in which, you know, in Chicago, a certain side of Chicago, they control the liquor distribution.
Mm-hmm.
When Jesse Jackson Jr., Jesse Jackson Jr. and his brothers, they used to own, you know, a major soda manufacturing plant. And that came after, you know, their father was protesting different things.
Mm-hmm.
And again, follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll sit back and we'll watch and wait as Jesse Sr. starts to, you know, throw his hat in the ring regarding gun control. So, I mean, you know, will they be opening a Glock manufacturing, you know, plant here in Chicago owned by the Jackson family? Is that next on the agenda? I mean, seriously, read people.
Yeah.
Research this. I'm not making it up. I posted this on my wall.
Yeah.
I've posted all this information on my wall. I'll post it again. Have no problems doing it. Can't get mad at me. I didn't write the article.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just saying read and understand what's happening
mm-hmm.
in this country. You know, and again, it's about money. You know, I don't necessarily think it's about, you know, race or sex or, you know, Republican or Democrat or anything. I think it all boils down to money. It all boils down to money. And, you know, again, you know, we just have to do the research and start holding these people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be afraid to voice your opinion. Do not be afraid to voice your opinion. And again, the telephone number here is 310-982-4273. Again, that's 310-982-4273. And press 1 if you want to speak with us. You know, and, you know, I just find, you know, a few things quite interesting. You know, with our little troll earlier, you know, I kind of have an idea as to who it is. He's my typical, he's the troll that always likes to try to give me a hard time. Someone mm-hmm. told me I should unfriend and block him. But why? Makes mm-hmm. it fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so anyway. You
well,
know,
we can talk about the rich white. We can talk about the rich. We can talk about the rich, what the stuff that the rich white people do. and the stuff they get away with.
Right. Well, I mean, but you know what? It goes back to, you know, something that I wanted to touch on that I said a few minutes ago in the show about how when there's a gun crime, you know, in the black community, how the children or the adults or young adults or whoever committed that crime, they're portrayed as thugs or people had it coming, and, you know, all of the negative stereotypes. And this is not in all cases, but in most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how these people are portrayed. But look at what happened with, you know, the shooter in Colorado and the one in Newtown there, over there in Connecticut, and these some of these other, you know, non-minority shooters. And they're characterized as misunderstood.
Mental.
They're characterized as having some type of mental illness.
Yeah.
They're characterized as, you know, geeks or nerds that were misunderstood or, you know, in some cases, emo.
You know, when it comes to that, I try to look at every individual case and everything. And in my opinion, it has to be something wrong with somebody who goes in with an assault rifle into an elementary school. You know, I don't know. I tell you this though, the fact that 9 times out of 10 these assault shooters are white males. Now a few of them have been, you know, one or two of them was like Asian or something like that, but the fact that the majority of these shooters, look at the profile for a serial killer. 9 times out of 10, a serial killer is a white male in his late 20s, early 30s, or something like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So there's something about this country that creates these people that are just
fucked up.
I mean, it's just the same
right.
demographic just about every time. I mean,
yeah.
I know the hood has a lot of violence and stuff like that. You know, 9 times out of 10, somebody in the hood is killing somebody who they've had some contact with. For some reason, they feel the need to kill this guy. These guys are going there and just offing everybody in the room just because, what, I got picked on or something? I mean, I don't know, but it's something about this country, something about America that's breeding these people, if you ask me.
And how many serial killers have been executed? I mean, it was a guy, I can't think of the guy's name that was here, what was his name, Muhammad? Oh, I can't think of his name. But he was
John Allen Muhammad.
Yeah, he was black. Remember that? Yeah. But here you got all the rest of these serial killers that are white are still in prison. They weren't executed.
Yep.
Well, you know, yeah, you know, Terry made a point in a room. He says to shoot anybody is a mental health issue. And, you know, I agree with that. And, you know, you all have heard talk, you know, in the past year and a half, I've talked extensively about mental health care in this country and how we need to remove the stigma. We need to have more services to provide to people, and services need to be easily accessible.
Yeah.
And, you know, people need access to their medications. Sorry, if someone is having a mental health issue and let's just say they're not able to work a standard job, well, they're not going to be able to pay $300 a month for medications. You understand? And then also, you know, wanted that, you know, there's a difference in some cases between the generic medication and the name brand medication. Well, some of these generic medications, you know, the manufacturing process varies from plant to plant. So, you know, the ingredients is going to vary, which means, you know, the effect is going to be different. With the name brand, there is one formula and one formula only. And this is why some of these people with the erratic behavior, all of that needs to be investigated.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be investigated. You know, and it's just as interesting, but we, the people, the constituents, we need to start forcing them to give us some answers. My whole thing is vote all these damn bastards out. Vote them out.
Yeah.
And let's start over. And we need to start raising up some of these children, some of these young people, grooming them for positions, you know, as, you know, a representative, as a senator, as an alderman, as, you know, a commissioner. We need to start grooming them and raising them so that they can understand the politics and what needed to be done in our communities. And my thing is, you get one try. You know, we'll elect you for a session, and if you do not do anything to affect change, positive change in our community, not a bunch of damn rhetoric, not a bunch of hot air. If you are not trying to affect change, you're gone. You're out of there. And we also need to change some of the rules with some of these federal legislators. Do you all know that if they're elected for one term, they receive their salaries for the rest of their lives?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
don't
yeah.
Don't have to be elected once.
Mm-hmm.
That's bullshit. If that's the case, I should be getting pensions from all over the goddamn place from these different companies I work for.
I don't think Congress should, I mean, as long as we have these high deficits and high job unemployment and whatnot, I don't think they should be getting paid. They're paid by taxpayer money. You know what I'm
they
saying?
Shouldn't
so,
be. They shouldn't be.
Yeah, I don't think they should be paid, you know?
Yeah. No,
you know, it trips me out, man. You sitting up there, you have to have, you got a hurricane that decimated an entire area, and y'all need to take time to schedule a time to talk about whether or not you're going to send those people aid. Why do you even need to discuss it?
And they're making
yeah,
like
you know what? Yeah, privatize Congress. Like they want to privatize the schools, privatize Congress and put them on a profit motive. You can't pass those bills. You're not making any money. We're going to offshore your job, Congressman.
Yeah.
You need a mental evaluation. If you're going to be a congressman or anything like that, they need a thorough mental evaluation. Most of them are crazy as hell up there.
I'm thinking that, you know, it took years for the first responders of 9/11 to get any type of aid. They had to fight tooth and nail for that stuff.
Yeah.
These people rushed down there to do their job and help out and everything. A lot of their comrades lost their lives in the original event and everything. And you have to decide whether or not you want to help these people.
Right.
You have to get people to vote on that, and there's some people who said no.
Mm-mm-mm.
Right.
Don't make
right. One of the things that tripped me out was when the tsunami happened in Japan, how the world was marveling at how civilized they were about their disaster. And how if a disaster happens in America, it's all out pandemonium, and everybody, no matter what, is trying to figure out how am I going to use this to my political advantage. and how am I going to make money off of it?
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And again, it goes back to money. It goes back to money, and you, it's just it's so much that we can talk about, so many different topics, you know, and we need to start demanding excellence. We need to raise the standards of excellence and demand that they reach in that they reach that standard and exceed it. That's what we need to start doing. Like I said, vote them out. And
but
going
not,
back to
go ahead, not yeah. only that, we are the ones that are keeping them rich. You know,
exactly.
We're the ones that are doing. We if you know, like I was dreaming. I said, now suppose nobody went to, you know, how you prepare for Christmas. Christmas is one of the biggest holidays that people be shopping. This, all right, well, say you go to Macy's. Okay, who is Macy's giving their money to? Okay, you know, we're paying these people to stay and be able to do, and then they work, the money they use, they work it against us.
Well, you know, and I agree, you know, and the thing is that, again, we control that. If people would stop buying this overpriced crap, the prices would come down. But I guess my question is, and, you know, I'm kind of guilty of some of this myself, I'll admit that, but what do you need with 20, 30 different pairs of shoes, okay?
Thank you.
What do you need with 12 computers? Why do you need a pair of $200-$300 Jordans? Why do you need a pair of $170 True Religion jeans? Why? Who are you trying to impress? The people you're trying to impress don't give a damn.
That's right.
You know, and in addition to that, you know, again, just so many different topics, so many different ways, you know. There's nothing wrong with wanting nice things. And it goes back to what I hit on earlier today when I was talking about the old church and the mega church and, you know, a lot of the moving, you know, what, you know, their ancestors, our ancestors built. So you got to go back in history. Our ancestors, when many of them, when they came out of slavery, they busted their asses to provide a good living for themselves and their children's children.
Right.
Many of them built businesses. You know, they built communities. You know, if you all aren't familiar with it, look up Black Wall Street.
Yeah.
And how when, you know, there were successful, you know, areas and businesses, how, you know, in some cases they were totally destroyed.
That's right.
Out of jealousy and envy. And but the thing is that now with the subsequent generations, you know, many of them do not understand the sacrifices that had been made. And they have a sense of entitlement. But then I'm looking at the parents because, you know, when the Civil Rights Act was signed, and a lot of people, you need to go and look up the Civil Rights Act. The one that was signed in the 60s was the third one. We've had three Civil Rights Acts. Look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Know your history. Mm-hmm. Understand it. And it's just, we got to take it back. You know, when I say take it back, we need to look at history and figure out what went wrong. And, I mean, you know, you have different authors out there, and some of the information is out there. You just have to read it. You have to read it. I have to read it. I haven't read everything, and that's why I encourage people to send me books and links and things like that. Have no problem. Have no problem with that. But we have to do something because it's getting worse.
Yeah.
It's getting worse, and it's getting worse. And, you know, I was just talking to someone the other day, and I'm like, I think it's time to get out the city. You know, some of the programs that I want to implement, one program in particular that I want to implement, it has to be done in the city. But now the issue with me personally is, you know, again, getting the right people in to volunteer some things, other positions, paid positions, but the neighborhood that, you know, I actually want to focus on, you know, especially with the murder rate here in Chicago. Afraid to open something now for the simple fact that I don't know who's going to come in there thinking that, you know, we handle money. And we won't be handling money. Everything will be done electronically. But they don't know that. And people are desperate. People are desperate. So it kind of, you know, with me, it kind of puts me between a rock and a hard place, you know, because, you know, one of the programs I wanted to start implementing this spring But now I'm sitting back and I'm looking and I'm like, well, where can I put this and be, you know, relatively safe? But there really is no safe place, if you will. It's about the mindset of the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the mindset of the people. So anyway, you know, my whole thing is do the research, understand what's happening around you. But going back to that one conversation there, you know, yeah, you know, the characterization of some of these people, you know, in the different neighborhoods and communities, you know, with some of the minority communities, oh, well, basically, you know, they're thugs and they're savages and they're animals and, you know, that's what they're used to and they deserve it and they get what they deserve. You know, that's the mindset of many people, some people. But when it happens in other neighborhoods, oh, well, they're just misunderstood and, you know, they didn't have opportunities or what have you, or they're angry. Well, why can't the people in these other neighborhoods be angry? They were oppressed. A lot of these other children come from privilege and entitlement. You know, are they angry because their mother didn't spend enough time with them? Are they angry because dad was, you know, being the executive of a corporation and was flying all over? I mean, it doesn't matter. Anger is anger. And everybody has emotions. Everybody feels different types of emotions. But why is it that it's characterized one way in certain communities and characterized another way in other communities? Mental health is mental health across the board. And it needs to be, you know, it needs to be addressed. And we have to stop this. And we have to find a way to fight back with the media, you know, like we've been doing. But we have to get a lot more aggressive. And this year I'm going to be a lot more aggressive in my approach to certain things because, you know, we have to do something. Something has to be said. It has to be challenged. So, you know, I'm pledging that I'm going to do my part, start challenging a lot of, you know, this institutionalized racism. Let's call it what it is.
Mm-hmm.
We have to start challenging it openly and not being afraid, you know. And we have to get out here. We have to help one another, and that's where the collectivism comes into play. Yeah, we have to help one another, even if you don't like one another. You know, you have to learn how to separate it. Quite a few people that I may not like personally, but I will support them in certain endeavors. I'm not going to support you in no damn foolishness,
mm-hmm.
but I will support you in something that's going to have a positive and resounding impact on our communities. And so, you know, the whole thing, like I said, you know, it's just interesting, but I want you guys to pay attention, and in particular pay attention to how a lot of these religions are now trying to find a common bond, or as religious people would say, a kindred spirit,
yeah.
Which means some type of commonality. Go ahead, honey.
I just think it's, I always have, even before, you know, this year, I looked at the way they were coming together. I would look at Farrakhan reading from the Bible. I said, uh-oh. I said, this is a new world order. This is the new world order, you know, all of them coming together. And, I mean, can you imagine being controlled completely under religion?
No.
Wouldn't that be a
And that's what we're fighting against. I mean, that's what we're fighting against. We're fighting against this country becoming a theocracy. And,
yeah.
You know, you call it a new world order. Other people, you know, call it Illuminati, you know, the way that I see all of that is basically, you know, again, it's about the haves versus the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
And I posted a quote on my page a few days ago about how the rich remain rich and continue to get rich because the poor keep producing, you know, more children, more slaves or what have you to support the rich and to enrich them. And, you know, again, it's about the mindset. But with these different religious communities, you know, they know that their numbers are diminishing. You know, we've posted and published all kinds of different stats, you know, from Pew Research. And, you know, you have a lot of different, you know, companies out here, corporations that are, you know, publishing their statistics on how religion is starting to dwindle in this country. So what they're doing is basically they're trying to band together to increase their numbers and to try to keep some type of religion. And I don't know how this is going to work because, you know, one thing that I know from dealing with a lot of these preachers and ministers, everybody wants to be in charge. Everybody wants to be the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just say sit back and be amused and entertained by watching them fight each other because that's what's going to happen. And that's what's happening now. But, you know, watch how they're trying to put it all together. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to draw us, the non-believers, into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I believe it's important that, you know, we have a seat at the table. And, but, you know, again, not just sitting there, you know, in tacit agreement, if you will. We have to sit there and we have to start challenging it. I mean, for Pat Robertson with his senile ass, for him to say that creationists, you know, need to just accept the fact that the earth is older than 6,000 years of age,
mm-hmm.
you know, there is a reason why he said that.
Yeah.
There is a reason why he said that, and it's important that we do not allow them to hijack the free thought, the atheist movement. Because, see, again, whenever something is successful, it is gaining traction and gaining ground, they come in and they try to hijack it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just trying to bring that to you all's attention. But, you know, yes, I feel that it's important that we, you know, play a part and be at the table. But, again, challenging
mm-hmm.
them. So, you know, again, you know, having some information and having a basic understanding of, you know, for example, a biogenesis, you know, how we began and understanding, you know, and have a basic understanding of evolution and even with that God particle, you know, how the universe began. You know, I'm not a physicist. I don't pretend to be one. I know a little bit about this, that, and the other, but you know, especially the people that are well-versed in that, being able to come to the table and challenge them on that and force them to answer the questions.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Come on.
So,
come on. That's what I'm talking about. Come on. I welcome it. I welcome it. I really think that since it's so prevalent, you know, it's so important in people's lives, religion, they ought to have in schools the history of religion. You know, have a class on it show. I mean, see, they all into. If you notice, they're only into what it has evolved to. You need to know what religion evolved from. And every time, if you notice the new translations of the Bible, they'll go to the newer ones, which makes everything sweeter and sweeter, and takes away. You know, from what it really meant. From, they don't never go back to the older Bible. If they, you know, they need to know the history. If you believe in something, I don't care what it is, you better know what it's all about.
Right,
and
you know,
most of them in church don't know nothing. They don't even read the Bible.
Yeah, and that's true. And that goes back to the statement, you know, the quote that I read from Minister Farrakhan, in which he says, you know, we all feel better. And that's the thing, you know, especially in this particular country, and, you know, people want to feel better. You know, that's the reason why, you know, someone was making a comment about, you know, people that smoke weed and drink. Well, yeah, of course, you know, someone that's high or drunk is going to seem to be in better spirits than someone that's sober. You know, that doesn't mean that they're happier. You know, it's just interesting, you know, how that works. But, honey, you know, just, you know, overall, you know, again, people want to feel better. They want to feel good. And there really is, you know, nothing wrong with wanting to feel better and wanting to feel good. But wouldn't you rather, you know, do that and feel better when it's earned and it's not a manufactured and it's, or it's not, you know, chemically induced. And, you know, even with, you know, again, going back to, you know, when he was talking about the Tyler Perry movies or what have you, you know, and I would definitely need Raina to attest to this because I'm not a neuroscientist or anything like that. But, you know, again, when I was saying earlier about the orgasm and a chocolate and a good meal or, you know, a good sermon or, you know, even a movie that makes you feel good, again, it goes back to those endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, got to do some more, you know, research on that. But, man, oh, man, oh, man. But, yeah, someone says, William, what do you think about all of this, William?
Oh, the conversation, it moved so fast. Like, every time I was like, okay, yeah, I have an opinion on that politician. Whoa, 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 we're on schools now. All right, I think I'm still stuck on the, I guess I'll run it back to the schools, like what the teachers deal with the students. And this is why I'll take the unpopular position here. What I'll assume is unpopular, I don't know, let me say it here, like, you know, people say you're pro-choice or you're anti-choice, like with the abortion deal. And I'm not pro-choice. I'm pro-abortion. I think that not everybody should be breeding, and you'd have less bad kids. Like, because some people are too young to breed, too dumb to breed, and not indoctrinated right to breed. They're not mature enough, and some, who knows, maybe never will be, or they could be crazy. And Alfred said breeding is easy though. And it's like they made the mistake of calling abortion like a bad thing or a shameful thing. It should be seen as a wise adult decision, the smart thing to do if you are not prepared to breed the species, because it is not that easy. Like, your offspring will probably still need your help up until it's like 25 or 28 years old. It's going to take a long time for it to grow up and develop a philosophy and be a well-rounded human being and a productive member of this species, the Homo erectus, us human beings. And you can't just wing it. You can't just be freestyling your parenting, like, I'm going to try this shit, toss them down the stairs. You can't do that. You got to go into that with a plan. That's why they called it Planned Parenthood. But they don't want that. They want rapid machine gun firing out units so they can get on the shift and start, you know, making products and making a profit.
Oh, yeah, and it's interesting that you would bring up Planned, you know, Parenthood. And I published, well, and I didn't publish, I posted, my apologies there, I posted an article about how they found, I think it was like either 5 or 7 additional Homo species. So, you know, you get Homo erectus, Homo sapiens, those are some of the common ones that we know about, you know, but, you know, it was like several more that, you know, people had not known about. I'm going to look for that article and post that again so that you can see the evolution of mankind. But anyway, going back to Planned Parenthood and the protesting against Planned Parenthood in our particular communities, basically, in our communities, in minority communities, there are not a lot of Planned Parenthoods. A lot of these young people do not have access to birth control. Because, you know, I was one of them, and I'm guilty of saying this, like, well, why didn't they just go get birth control? You know, it's available. Yeah, it's available, but in many cases, you know, they didn't have the facilities around or the parents wouldn't sign for it and all of that. I just happened to have been one of those fortunate people that, I've never used birth control. Let's just, you know, be honest about that. You know, I've never was on the pill or anything like that. My mom would not have, you know, approved, and she would not have helped me with that. So, you know, again, as you get older and you live a little, you learn some things. But, yeah, Planned Parenthood, you know, they're attacking Planned Parenthood, but they're attacking Planned Parenthood because they want these people to have more children. They want them to have more children so they can have cheap labor.
Right.
And so, you know, we'll talk about that. You know, we'll talk about that a little bit more in the future. I don't necessarily think it's a conspiracy per se, but it needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. It definitely needs to be addressed. And, again, This is Black Free Thinkers, and we are here to challenge you to think and live for yourself, not convert you. We have absolutely nothing to convert you to. So, again, happy 2013. Happy New Year. We're in a new year. We're going to be bringing a lot stronger, you know, this year, a lot more topics. January 15th, the barbershop debuts. We're looking forward to Father Teresa and Dragnet on their show. Their information, click the links. It'll take you to their pages and their, you know, YouTube and Twitter and all that. Hey, guys, wonderful people. You're beautiful. Thank you for being a part of our lives. Mario, next Friday, talking about relationship, and Raina coming up on upcoming Saturday. And I'll see you guys next Sunday. And until then, peace, love, and I wish you all the very best. Love you much, and thank you so much for the support. You all take care, and have a beautiful weekend.
All of y'all.
May Allah bless you.
Yeah. There's a little of goodness there, all right now.
Crazy.